Hello, friends. This is Karin Smith. I am currently the Domestic Recruitment Manager at Beloit College in Beloit, Wisconsin. However, there's an addition to my title that's an important addition. I am Chicago-based. I am a regional representative for my institution. Welcome to the ELP.
Welcome to the ALP, the Admissions Leadership Podcast, a series of one-on-one conversations with people who have been climbing the leadership mountain in college admissions. Some are nearing the summit, some are already there. But how did they get there, and what can other climbers learn from their mindsets, habits, and experiences? I'm your host, Ken Anselment, VP for Enrollment Management at RHB, and with me today is my, can I say old friend or just long-time
friend? Oh, please feel free to say old friend, because
My old friend, Karin Smith. Karin, welcome to the ELP.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I note in your introduction, you really wanted to make sure you emphasized the Chicago part of things.
Yep.
Okay. Go on. No.
Why?
No, yeah, well, I mean, and it's not, well, I mean, we don't have to talk about baseball, but it's not a Cubs Brewers thing, right?
No.
I mean, you have definitively been a Chicago-based person for as long as I've known you.
No, wrong.
Aside from a brief detour, but you know, Chicago has been your base, decidedly so. And that might be a good place to start. Why did you choose to emphasize that in your intro?
Because there's a large group of us ever growing. Well, no. Let's say this because it's in my heart. To your point, it's who I've been for a really long time, even before our world really understood what that meant. To be a regional, I'm making air quotes here, for an institution.
I can see them, and our audio listeners will also see them.
To be a regional means that we work, and there's roughly 2,000 of us, for our institutions intentionally someplace away from where our institution is located.
Right.
We started small and we are a big voice in our profession right now. And I hope henceforth and forevermore. So I tell all of my colleagues who work the way I do to please make sure that that is on your identifier on your school's website. And you'd be surprised at how many schools don't do that. Right? Don't you want people to know that you've placed someone in a neighborhood that's important to you as an institution? Yes, you do.
Karin, just to set the frame for folks who, I mean, we came in right away on Chicago. How long have you been a regional rep? And I should preface it by saying you've been a regional rep before it was like a cool thing to do.
Right. Well.
And I made air quotes around cool, but before it really took off. As a thing.
So I've worked in college admissions for 40 years. Go ahead. You can say, damn, lady, you are old.
Nope. I didn't say that. And if any listeners are thinking that.
No, you can. You can. I say it to the students I work with all the time. So for 40 years, I have loved this profession. I continue to love it every day. The first 5 years, I worked in the office at Beloit College. Then we made a change. My husband got his first head coaching job in Chicago, and I had already had Chicago as a territory. And so I bartered a deal. I said, could we try for a year that I would come to the Beloit office and work 2 days a week, and the other 3 days a week, I'll work from home. Great. We'll try that. 1 year became 9 years. Now, was I truly a regional at that point? I was not. My institution had not placed me there intentionally. Okay, so 13 years in, I decided to make a change. And I was hired by the University of Denver by a man who is legendary in our profession, Roger Campbell, who was ahead of his time. He understood what regionals were and what they could do for an institution. And so I joined a team that already had a person on the East Coast and a person in California. And for the first time, I really was what we now define as regional representative. And I was based in Chicago. So for all but 5 years, I have worked not where my institution is located.
So just to situate this in history, how many Chicago reps were there to your awareness when you got started?
I knew because...
Like in office.
There were six of us. I'll tell you how I know. Because a little few months into it, I truly said to myself, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. Like, what? How does this work? And so I was able to find five other people that I knew were working the way I was working. And in an effort to try to learn from them and see if I could figure out how I was supposed to do this, I collected them. I said, hey, friends, would you like to come to my house for coffee? And can we maybe help each other and talk about this? And you can tell me what you know, and I'll tell you the very little I know, but I'll provide coffee and muffins and scones, whatever you want, right?
That's a good hustle.
And so we came together, and fast forward, that was the launch of the Chicago Area Regional Reps, or CAR, as well.
And what year was this, Karen?
1991 is when I started working at the University of Denver.
And do you remember who the other five were, or the institutions that they were at?
Two of them were from Illinois institutions, one from Southern Illinois University, one from Western Illinois University, one from Creighton.
Oh, really?
Dear to your heart, my friend.
Beth Sullivan Piskel? Yeah. Oh, nice. Who recruited my daughter? She's awesome. She is awesome.
One from Ripon College, and I can't remember the others. I should be able to remember them.
This small but mighty group got started at your home. When did it become a thing? I mean, you got these folks together. Did you get them together thinking, hey, let's make an organization. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. Or was it just, hey, I want to learn?
No, it was, hey, I want to learn.
When did you realize?
Hey, I want to cover my own ass, right? And see if I can figure out how to do this, really.
right.
Yeah, no, it was probably 2 or 3 years later is when we became kind of official.
We
were fortunate. There was already a group like this in California. And the regional that I was working with at DU from California, Suda Reuter, a huge name in college admissions, was very generous in telling me what they were doing in California so that we could beg, borrow, and steal.
Right. So you had the rack and the car, right? Okay.
How many organizations, regional groups are there now?
Is that a question you think I have the answer to, or are you asking so you can answer it?
This is important.
More than 26. Two.
26.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you said, when you said at the top of the interview, there are 2,000 of you out there.
That we can find.
You can find. But I'm going to presume that the Chicago group and the RAC group out in California are two of the biggest that are out there.
Yeah, we are. But then there are, if all of the Texas groups combined, there would be way more of them than either one of
us.
Right.
Got it. This might be a place to walk into this conversation, because I mean, we've already been in the conversation for a bit, but you know, when I tee up the show, I say, you know, some are climbing, some are approaching the summit, some are already there. And you and I have talked about this a bunch, and at some point we will reveal that you and I worked together for a very long time at Lawrence. And that's also part of the story, but you've had opportunities to be a director or higher, and you've chosen the level that you've been at, and understand that you can lead without the title. Can you talk a little bit more about those choices?
Yeah, thank you.
And I think that would be really interesting. And also, you know, when you had opportunities come your way, you know, what made you decide not to go any further with those? I teed up a lot of, I've said teed up like 12 times already, but I've packed a lot of questions in there. So let's just start with the, when did you decide this was the path you wanted to be on?
There was a, the regional path or not the big title path?
Let's say the not the big title path. And maybe they're both related. Yeah, I imagine they are strongly related.
But yeah.
Take it however you'd like.
The not the big title path. I am like a lot of, I was like a lot of newbies, new to a profession, individuals that has just a modicum of competitiveness in me.
You? What are you talking about?
Right. Who believe, and I did, that you're always should be striving to be in the starting lineup. Should be striving to be the biggest point getter. Should be striving for the next position on the rung. Mm-hmm. And I was that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely 100%. And along with that, my husband and I were working hard to have a family. And for us, that did not come easily. Not at all.
Right.
And so we were blessed with baby number one that was 5 years in the making. And then ironically, at almost literally the same moment, I was offered a big title at Beloit College and found out I was pregnant with baby number two. Right? And I was angst-ridden, doesn't even begin to describe it. Because, of course, you want the next thing. And I had the opportunity for that next thing. But also, I was a mom. And so, two people came into my life. Well, they were part of my life. But said things to me that were exactly what I needed to hear. One of them in the profession. And what's so funny is I was at a Beloit basketball game a couple weeks ago and saw this person across the gym and couldn't get to him in time to say hello before he left. But one of them in the profession, Spike Gomery, who...
No way.
Oh, hell yeah.
Spike was there?
Spike was there.
Spike never
ages, ever.
No, and just for folks who may not know who Spike Gomery is and why I did a spit take with my tea here, who's Spike Gomery?
Well, he's Lake Forest College, period, end of sentence. I mean, like, what else is he, right?
Yeah.
He has done everything at Lake Forest College.
Yeah.
Literally everything except been president. And I think they probably asked him to do that, and he said, no, that would interfere with my golf.
Yeah.
Right. Seriously. Right. So the two of us were walking out of a college fair together, and his car was next to my car, and we were talking, and I was still really in awe of him. And I said something to him about this opportunity, and he said to me, Karin, just because you've been offered it doesn't mean you have to take it. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait, what? He said, no, seriously. If it's not right, it's not right. And it was like permission, right? Like permission from someone that I held in such a high esteem, like saying, and he said, you don't think I've done that before? And I said, you have not. And he said, sure I have. So that was number one. Number two, huge shout out. Many people may know, and if they don't know, they should know, Casey Johnson, who is well known in the Chicago area. He's on NBC Sports Chicago, and he covers the Bulls. And he was in my very first recruiting class a million thousand years ago and at Beloit College. And he came. And I got to know his family really well. And his mom was just, for a time, a second mom to me. And I saw her in the midst of all of this. And I had already talked to my own mom and my sister and my people. And, you know, I just was like, and my husband, who's great, was like, you do what you think is best. And, you know, we're going to be fine. And she said to me, Karin, you can be a mom of little kids for but a short period of time in your life. You can be a director of admission anytime in your life. And if you think that this won't come back around again, if you want it to, you're mistaken.
Hmm.
And I was like, that's it. That's it right there. Perfect. That's what I needed to hear.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I politely said no.
And your career was not tanked forevermore as a result of it?
Just define tanked.
I think sometimes people, I was being silly, but I think sometimes people feel that, oh, if I don't take this, A, there's not going to be another opportunity like this, or B, it might indicate that I'm not hungry and other opportunities like this may never come my way again.
Right, right. Well, I didn't.
Right.
Yes, we do think that. But so let's go a little step further. What it did was it gave me time and space to get to a point where I realized I don't want that job. I don't want it.
You knew what it was going to be like in the 2020s.
Well, no. Funny. No. I started to watch people like you and people like Steve and people like Beth and other.
Steve Syverson and Beth Petrie for folks who.
Yeah. Yep. And I thought, yeah, they don't ever interface with students. They're in meetings and meetings and meetings. And
that's the part they don't tell us
correct.
About.
And right. Are you doing right. good things? Of course. Are you making big decisions? Of course. Are you leading a team? Yeah. Of course. But some of those things that I truly, truly loved, yeah. leading a team, I could get without having to have the big title. And So I went from, and you correct me if I'm wrong, because you would
never.
Know. I went from delaying that as part of my career to owning that as part of my career. And realizing, and invariably I would get the question, why haven't you?
Right? Mm, that construction is interesting.
Right. Why haven't you? And I knew, I mean, at a certain point I wasn't stupid and I knew the question was coming. And I said, because this is true, A, I don't want it. B, I wouldn't be good at it. C, it's not the best thing that I can do for the institution where I'm going to work. And D, I'm fine with knowing that part of my job is to make you look good. And A, I'm fine with it. And B, I'm good at it.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
But it didn't all happen quickly. And I have owned that. I've owned that. And I've found leadership positions in other places.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Illinois ACAC president for one.
Yes. Yes. Founding the CAR organization, being involved in founding the national regional organization. And
you ran the college fairs in Illinois.
I did.
Right?
We restructured and reorganized them. But here's another important thing that I think is, true to who I am. Bigger, more and more is not always good.
It's the American way, Carl.
Well, yes and no. Can I?
I'm saying facetiously.
Yeah, right. But once again, I got a phone call. Would you consider running for a national position? Absolutely not. Never. Never. Not because I don't respect NACAC. I do. But because my people are here and I want to take care of my people. It's like, I don't want the big title. Can you imagine me? Let's just picture this because of course you know me and you have been in those big NACAC rooms.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think I would actually be able to sit still in a meeting with a whole bunch of others trying to, I don't even know what, solve problems?
Yeah.
And not, first of all, sitting still, you know that, I'm not good at that. But secondly, not have a tendency to say, really? Are we just going to talk this to death or are we going to get something done?
Right, right.
Because if we're just going to.
I'll answer the question.
Forget it. No.
Yeah. I'd set the over under on that as 47.
Exactly.
Right. Because you might not say anything. You might not even move in your seat. But there's going to be a change in your facial expression.
Correct.
That actually is accompanied by a sort of a head shimmy where people will understand that you've got something to say.
Oh.
That's why we've never played poker because your tells are pretty obvious. And it's one of your charms, Karen. The things you can say without speaking.
So there you go. I have intentionally chose this. It's worked very well for me. It's also worked really well for my family.
Well, in your positions, I should say, I'll turn toward the audience here and say, if you happen to be a leader, someone with the title or someone with the decision-making ability to hire folks like a Karen, if you can get someone with the depth of experience who doesn't want to be in charge and wants to help build you up and build your team, that's a first round draft pick. And we're doing a lot of sports metaphors.
That's good. I was hoping we would.
Right. But that's gold for your team if you can get mm-hmm. that. And I speak from experience.
Oh. So
Karen, we first got connected, I think, in 2004. We may have predated when I was at Marquette and you were working on the Cows tour.
I don't understand.
Okay. Yeah. Well, counselors observing Wisconsin schools, when you live in Wisconsin and ply the trade in Wisconsin, you have to make dairy-based metaphors and acronyms. And so you start with cows and then build the terms around it. So counselors observing Wisconsin schools, one of the best counselor tours in the country. I don't care what the other regional folks say. This is cows is or was where it's at. Anyway, you and I started working together in 2004 when this brand new admission director joined the team. Someone who, God bless Steve Syverson, hired him. We talk about him in the third person these days, but hired me despite my not having any direct supervisory experience. He said, yeah, let's make this guy our director of admission with a team full of deeply experienced admission professionals, I might add. Uh-huh. An act of courage by Steve and unabashed, I didn't even know what I had when I said yes. But anyway, I was fortunate enough to have you in my corner early as someone who saw this new admission director as a, let's say, a building project.
Okay.
Well, I think one of the things that's useful for someone who has the experience and expertise that you do or that others do is the ability to manage up, the ability to help the person who's new in role maybe anticipate what's around the corner or what's down the street, things that they're not ready for. And you serve that role time and time again. You were also, I think you've described yourself as the off-campus safe place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you weren't in the office, you could serve as sort of a sounding board. You weren't some sort of mole, but you would kindly point out things that I may have been missing, or things that may have been happening with the team that you were picking up mm-hmm. on that I should be aware mm-hmm. of. And for that, I'm grateful. Mm-hmm. You also, I'd like to hear your side of the story, but Karen, I don't remember when it was, but I think it was definitely in my first year where I think you realized I really needed help, both figuring out how to work with Steve Syverson. Not that you need to learn how to work with Steve, but someone who can do who knows how to do all the things, and who had the role before I did. You know how I could compliment someone like him in my role. And then you called our mutual friend Molly Arnold to come on up and actually spend a day and a half with me off campus just coaching me up.
Yeah.
How did that come to be?
Well,
and how bad had it gotten?
No. It hadn't. No, it had a lot more to do with my incredible impatience than anything else. No, I'm not kidding you. It's true.
I hear you.
It's true. And it also was circumstantial. You were an opportunity for a fresh start. No, seriously.
Yeah.
I got to be involved in your hiring process. And I don't know if you remember that.
Refresh my memory.
Steve said, I had done this when I was at the University of Denver. And Steve knew it. And so he's like, okay, you run this search. The early part of it. And this is back when we did searches real differently. And, you know, so I put together the schedule and the people, and I talked to Steve a lot, and it was great. And, but anyways, so you were my choice. And you were the choice of others, obviously. And so I had a very vested interest in wanting to make this work well. I just did. And it was selfish to a degree, but it was like, come on, I'm not patient with all of this. And so I saw you come in and and you're correct, right? Anybody out there in the ethers nets that work in college admissions, you would be shocked at what your regional people know that others on your campus don't. Because to your point, we're the safe space. And it's just so funny to me what people will tell us because we're not there all the time.
Right. And to be fair, it's not that you're turning around and parroting everything that you're hearing. You were always really good at giving themes without citation.
100%. Well, then people stop talking to you if you don't do that.
Oh, right? Exactly. But, you know, important point to be a sustainable coach in that regard. You know, you got to. And I do you think people are sharing those sorts of things with you or others in your role because they hope it gets back to that person?
Oh, some people might, but
indirectly manage through you.
Yeah, yeah, some people might, but I think most people just want somebody to talk to, right? Somebody to say,
yeah,
somebody they feel they can trust. So, anyways, okay. So you show up, and I'm like, okay, let's go now. Come on, stop asking Steve for permission. Be a director. So many amazing signs of it, but you were being deferential and
I was spinning my wheels.
Yes.
Yeah. Not because of anything Steve was doing.
No.
It was all how I was responding to in the face of a well-respected, well-established authority.
And it's a lot to get figured out. We all know this. You walk into a place with a seasoned staff. Well, how are you ever going to know? You're not. And that's part of the beauty. That's what I was so excited about. Like you get a clean start, a fresh slate. This is a good place for you to do this because you have buffers on both sides. Now you just have to.
Yeah.
Figure out how to collect the buffers. At the same time, I had gotten to know Molly Arnold, who was at the time the director of admissions at Illinois State University, because we had both been delegates to the NACAC assembly. And
right.
I didn't really know her, but wow. You want to talk about somebody who can take a place by storm? Was her. And I remember the first time I had any a lengthy conversation with her, and I was like, where the hell have you been? Like, how do I not know you? And we very quickly became good friends, but also I think very respected colleagues. She did some things in her leadership life that were startling, impactful, amazing to me. And so I paid really close attention. She was also feeling a little, having one of those career midlife crises, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I said, Molly, would you ever help somebody else trying to do what you do? And she goes, well, I do that all the time. And I said, no, no, no. Like, really help them? Like, sit down and spend significant time with them and just get to know them and share. And, you know, like, this person that's new in my life, my professional life, has the potential, I believe, to be a you. But he's brand new. And you would like him. He's a good guy. And he would like you. And he needs you. And he doesn't know that. And I need you to think about doing this. And would you? And I hadn't even finished the whole thing. She says, yes, I will do that. The stars aligned. And she came and probably for the first time in my short life of supporting you as a boss, I took a really deep breath because I thought, you know, if Molly can't help him get it figured out and Ken can't take this for what it's worth, I mean, you know, the potential for success was already there. But sometimes I think what was important to me was that you were not on campus doing this and she wasn't on her campus doing this.
Right. We were at the Copper
League. Yeah, exactly. Right. Because people would get in the way.
Conference room. Yep. Yeah. No, it was great.
Yeah.
And it was the perfect illustration, I think, of inertia. Maybe it's inertia. You know, an object at rest will stay at rest, or an object in motion will stay in motion. And she was the force that knocked me into a different trajectory in a major way. I mean, it wasn't like an overnight thing, but she equipped me with tools, I think, in the ability to see what was happening as it was happening and not make it about me, which is hard, I think, when you're new and you're trying to prove yourself.
100%.
But to sort of separate role from person and be more strategic, and also when to shut up. But more than anything, I came out of that with a sense of confidence that I hadn't had before that. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you all the lessons she shared with me? Absolutely not. I don't recall what they all were, but it was exactly what I needed at that time.
Yeah.
And more than any, she had zero agenda.
Right.
And we filled a day, and we had a day and a half of therapy, basically. Just compressed that I then took with me. And then you, I don't know if the two of you talked about things after that, and I don't need
to. No.
It was what I needed when I needed it to become a better director for the team I had inherited.
Well, and I think I know she would tell you if she were still here, it's what she needed at the time too.
I didn't think about that at all.
She did. She valued getting to be the expert, getting to hear herself remind herself of how really awesome she was.
Huh. Yeah.
So you're welcome, both of you.
And as you're talking about her, I'll admit I think it might be that it's been really windy and dusty out here in Colorado, but my eyes are a little damper than normal.
This is the leadership podcast, right? Missions leadership.
Correct. Yes. Otherwise the acronym doesn't work.
Yes. Yep. And so I have thought a lot, particularly recently, about leadership. And maybe it's just a synergy of thoughts I've had for a long time. And I'm able to be a little bit more succinct with them. But I started thinking about, okay, who are the leaders that I know, that I really respect, and why? And am I also that person, right? Do I emulate and practice those leadership qualities? Right? It's important to me. And for those of you who don't know me well, although I've never had the big title, I like to think that I manage and lead smaller teams really well. And it's incredibly important to me. And it's probably something that I think about most and noodle with and tweak and try to figure out. Anyways, so I've gotten pretty succinct with what I believe makes for a good leader.
You have the key?
In the Karin Smith world. In the Karin Smith world, right?
Yeah. No, I'm leaning in.
Great. So I'm going to say it in two ways. One, okay. I believe that really good and impactful leaders are individuals who have the rare, and it is rare, ability to sometimes stand in front of their team. Sometimes stand side by side with their team, and other times stand behind their team. Another way to put it is this. It's the, I've got this versus the, we've got this versus the, you've got this.
Oh, Karin.
Well, and that's, And I've gone through the list of individuals that I believe to be in the Karin Smith world, again, true leaders. And I've watched my husband craft this to perfection over the years in his career as a coach. Yeah. And I, for each of the people, and you're one of them, Ken, Molly was certainly one of them. Each of the individuals that have been impactful leaders in my life have that quality. And it's hard because, as you know me well, I can, in with my lack of patience, run into a room like my pants are on fire and be like, we're gonna get this done. This is how we're gonna do this. And had that fail just colossally. And so I have learned. And sometimes do I still do it? Sometimes. But I try really hard not to. And when we are interviewing in wherever I'm working for positions that I will be working with, that's my ultimate, at the end of the day, question.
The question is,
Is this a in front, side by side, stand behind person? And the biggest tell that they might not be ready?
I bet you I can guess. Really?
Mm-hmm, yes.
is it someone who used the singular first person pronoun refer to teamwork?
Yep.
It's my class. Yep. It's my team. It's my results. My goals.
Yes.
Is that?
Yeah.
I know you well enough to know you were going there, Karin.
And who was the first person who pointed this out in my life a million years ago? That was the man who was the head football coach and athletic director at Bullitt College.
Okay.
Yeah. Ed DeGeorge, who hired me as a student trainer, sight unseen.
Oh, jeez.
But he's...
You're getting all the shout outs.
Well, I'm just telling you, right?
Yeah.
I remember him just describing a coach that was about to take a new position and leave Bullitt College and saying of her, she never, ever used the words I or my. It was always ours or us. And I remember thinking, well, does that mean she's not taking responsibility? Another great example that's just very pertinent right now. You ever watch Steve Kerr coach a game?
Not as closely as you have.
An NBA basketball game. Now, take Steve Kerr and take Draymond Green. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, Draymond Green. An incredibly, incredibly good.
And for those who aren't
sports fans, right?
This is Steve Kerr is the head coach of the Golden State Warriors.
And correct.
Draymond Green is an excellent athlete, challenging teammate to work with.
Yes. Yes.
High gifts.
Yes. Yes. And I have, and Draymond Green is a big guy. And he's somebody that actually is very near and dear to my heart because he and my oldest daughter were at Michigan State together and they kind of know each other. He was good to her and she can give him a hard time. Anyways, to stand in front of Draymond Green in a moment when you have to do that,
yeah,
Steve Kerr will do it.
Yeah.
To stand beside.
And Steve Kerr is not a
correct.
Big guy.
I mean, he's not little, but he's not Draymond. I've seen him stand next to Draymond Green, and I have seen him blissfully stand behind Draymond Green.
Hmm.
And I watch them, and I think, there it is right there for anybody who ever watches NBA basketball. There it is to see. And it takes humility. It takes a lack of putting my ego out in front. And yet these are two individuals who are raked over the coals and lauded both on any right. given day in the media right. every day.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. you know, and most leaders don't have to do that, thank goodness, but we impact others.
Karen, that's gold.
I don't know if it's
well,
gold.
No, it, no, the, just the awareness. I mean, not half this, I can't quantify it, but some of the success that folks can have in this can be realized. Words are coming hard, which is tough when you're doing a podcast. No, but having that self-awareness to also know in the moment what's required, and even having the language or the labels to, even if you're not describing it overtly to those you're working with, but asking yourself, is this where I need to get out in front? I need to be alongside, or I need to be behind? Uh-huh. And thinking of the choices that you have. And sometimes it means not going with your gut. Often it may mean not going with your gut, depending on what your gut is like, but that's great advice.
Well, it also means being willing to support others when they fail.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or even weirder, letting them fail.
Yeah. That's hard.
Uh-huh.
But yes, 100%.
But doing it in a way that makes it still safe for them to have it be a learning,
yep.
learning moment.
Yep. Yeah. Because don't we want to protect them, right? But then we're not really doing them any favors at all.
Right. Sounds a lot like parenting.
Just to
bring it around, bring it all the way around and back to the choices that you've made.
And
the skill set that you developed early in your mm-hmm. career that have, well, maybe I'm being a little too cute, but there are patterns there. We had a whole bunch of questions that we were going to get to, but I also know that you have a full-time job and I have a full-time job. And there's a point in a podcast where it starts to get really, it starts to get to that point where people are like, am I going to listen to this one? Am I going to go all the way?
I know, right? Yeah, we don't want them to do that with us.
Regardless of how good the guest is. And so what that's my long, long wind up to say, and I hear you shuffling papers. You know, I'm going to ask, are you ready?
I am. You know, I had to make notes. I had to be like, yes, I'm ready.
Of course. Ready. Of course. And I'm going to ask you, because knowing what a big baseball fan you are, and I've asked this before, is it a walk out song or a walk up song?
Depends right? on the situation.
Like if you're
depends
coming out.
Depends on
if
the situation, if, sir.
If you're coming out of the dugout, if you're coming
center
out of the dugout.
Center field by John Fogerty every single freaking time.
Oh, that's your walk out song?
My walk out, walk up song. Yes.
Okay. Okay. So great. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. But which one is it? Is it a walk out?
It depends on the situation.
Okay. All right. And that, by the way, that voice took me way back. And anybody who's worked with you has
it's
heard
so
that
perfect.
Voice.
It's just so perfect. It's just whatever. Yeah.
All right, Karen, what's the best thing you've read lately?
Well, I've reread it. And that is huh? Boys in the Boat by Daniel James Brown. And I read it a while ago. Then I went and saw the movie with my youngest daughter. It's my Christmas gift. And there's a line at the end of that movie that has become...
No spoilers.
Well, I'm just...
Well, I mean, it's a historical...
But it's become a mantra for my team at Beloit College this year. And at the very end, one of the individuals who'd been in the boat is now a grandpa. And he's talking to his grandson. They're standing by a pier. And the grandson is learning to row. And the grandson says to him something along the lines of, I just want to understand what it was like to be part of an eight, referring to the eight-man skull.
Yeah.
And the grandpa said, and I quote, "It was never an eight. It was always a one."
Ooh.
Right?
Oh, goosebumps.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So now I just reread the book again, and it's very
good. Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's up next?
Leaders Eat Last.
Oh, Simon Sinek?
There you go. Yes.
Nice. Yes. What's a podcast you particularly enjoy? And if you don't.
I'm very fickle on podcasts. Very fickle.
You're a big audiobook.
There you
person.
Go. That's the primary thing, because I'm just obsessed with audiobooks. Obsessed. Yes. So.
Given the amount of time you spend in a car, that makes a lot of sense.
Walking the dog in the car.
Yeah. That's that too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I just realized, like, and this is going to be the worst dad joke ever, or at least on this podcast. It seems fitting that Karin, who spends a lot of time in a car, would found the
Stop.
Car.
I didn't come up with the name of the group.
I'm just saying, like, it all fits together. It really does. Mm-hmm. It's
mm-hmm. Yes.
A person who literally professionally grew into her name. Okay. So what's your favorite thing to make in the kitchen?
I'm a baker. So like scones, muffins, cookies, and then you can give them away and make people feel good.
Okay. Do you have a specific? Like your go-to. You've got one thing you've got to bake in the kitchen.
Just this last weekend, I made cinnamon scones.
Yeah.
First of all, they're not good for you. Not at all. Not on any level.
Are there a lot of baked goods at all?
I can make some that are very good for you. Yeah. Yes.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cinnamon scone. All right. Karin, what do you use to make and take and keep your notes?
Lined notebooks from Rifle Paper Company.
From Rifle mm-hmm. Paper Company?
Yeah. Okay. They're cool. Fun.
And do you care about the writing implement that you're using to write on those lines?
Again, I'm kind of fickle about that.
Okay.
However, I always have, this is important to me, a sharpened pencil with an eraser.
Oh.
Sometimes.
Okay.
You just need pencil.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. What's a memorable bit of advice you've received, unless if you've already cited it, because you dropped a few nuggets throughout the show.
No, I want to give a shout out to a younger woman that I worked with recently who, but nonetheless, she said, "Karin, please." I don't think she said please, and she shouldn't have said please. Learn to use delay send. And I did.
Yes.
I did. And I do.
It's a gift. It's a gift to others.
Yes, it is.
and maybe a gift to
it
yourself.
It is a gift to myself, because then I can check the box. You know me, I want to check my box.
That's
without blowing up their box.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. All right. Item last.
Ready?
Name an item on your bucket list that you haven't yet checked off, presuming, of course, that you have a bucket list.
I have a bucket list. It's not a bucket list. Okay. It's a travel list, believe it or not. Right?
Which is what these end up being.
Well.
In many cases. People want to go to places. Yeah, let's.
Spring training. Watching the Cubs next spring in Arizona. Finally!
You haven't done spring training yet, Karin?
Don't be like
Come on.
That.
I suppose spring training.
Think of my life and why that happened.
Spring travel, spring training just ain't going to happen.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair point. Mm-hmm. Fair point.
Yeah. So there you go.
Okay. Go Brewers.
No. No.
Yeah. Enjoy Craig Counsell.
Does the man ever smile? Does any coach that's ever seen on television ever smile? They don't. It's very sad to me. Very sad.
Well,
they don't.
Maybe some listeners will have some coaches that smile. Mm,
Steve Kerr. I've seen Steve Kerr.
Feel free to send them. Feel free to send them in. You can post them to the Alps LinkedIn page.
There you go.
All right, okay. Karin.
Ken.
Karin, thanks for hanging on the pod today.
Thank you for having me.
It was good to. It was good to reconnect.
Thank you. You know what? I just thank you for having me, and I know that it was. I have been fortunate to support you in this effort, and know you and know that A, I don't have the big title, and B, I can go very rogue in a conversation like this, and you know it probably better than most of the world. So I want to thank you for a certain amount of courage on your part to invite me.
Okay. Thank
Isn't
you.
Isn't that true?
Courage? No.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, no, because I think it's the realization, recognition, some word that begins with R, that leadership doesn't always require a title.
Thank you.
There we go.
Thank you.
Let's put a bow on that. And I will close the show as I always do, which is to say, Karin, may all your big dreams come true, at least the good ones. And to you, dear listener, thanks for listening. Be well and do well.